We will proceed to our second case of the morning, which is United States v. Fairley Jones. Ms. Garaskowicz?
Good morning. My name is Susan Karaskevich, and I represent the defendant, Fairley Jones, in this appeal. May it please the court, counsel, three errors occurred during Fairley Jones' sentencing. On two of the three issues, the parties are in agreement that this case should be remanded to the district court for resentencing. First, Fairley Jones was subject to an enhanced base offense level of 24 under 2K2.1A2 because he possessed a firearm after having been twice convicted of a crime of violence or a controlled substance offense. But as we know, for these prior convictions to apply, they must garner criminal history points. And in Mr. Jones's case, his 1995 aggravated discharge of a firearm didn't count because as Jones was 17 years old, even though he was waived into adult court, he was ultimately given a probation term and served only 6 months incarceration and was released from that confinement more than 5 years before his involvement in this offense. On this issue, we know then that he would have had a base offense level of 22 for the one conviction for the counterfeit substance of 2001. That would have rendered his guideline score with a total offense level of 22 and a criminal history level 6 at 84 to 105 months.
Base offense level of 22 or 24?
22 for the... Okay. It's the error that makes it a 24, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, if we start with that, and at this point, the government is in agreement that there was an error there. And it's a substantial error. It's a substantial error that affects, obviously, Mr. Jones' substantial rights, and it is a plain error. The next area of agreement involves Mr. Jones's cooperation with the government, a fact he asked the court to consider when imposing his sentence. And as we know, Jones's focus at the sentencing was his cooperation with the government, both in his...
I'm sorry, I just want to interrupt. I think what you're arguing is that his correct base level is 20, not 22.
Yes, I'm arguing actually his total offense level would be 22.
Right, so but the right. Base level is 20.
Right.
Okay, just to
obviously,
be clear.
Felon in possession... on its face is with nothing else as a 14,
right.
And then with his prior...
With one prior,
he's a 20, and then the 22, I'm sorry, I omitted the fact that the 22, the extra 2 points he gets, is because the weapon was stolen in a burglary
right.
approximately
right.
9 weeks before.
And that's not at issue.
It's not at issue, and there's no allegation or nothing in the record to indicate that Mr. Jones was the one who committed that burglary, and I think that's important also. There's also nothing... in these facts that would, for my later argument, that would lend anyone to believe that Mr. Jones knew that Mr. Walker, the informant, was going to commit another felony offense.
Other than being a felon in possession. Right.
Which will become a focus later.
Right.
You know, frankly, these facts are very unusual in that Mr. Jones did cooperate with the government extensively. And then, based on what he perceived was a promise from the former prosecutor in his case of a 20% discount for walking through the door to cooperate, he decided he'd go to trial because he felt that the government basically reneged on their offer.
And but your point is that the judge was confused about the need for 5K1.1 motion for 3553A.
Yes, and in all honesty, I think Judge Miranda was really trying to tell Mr. Jones, look, you know, if the government, it seems that everyone's in agreement, you have given a lot of information to the government. And if down the line that information comes to fruition and can be used and manifests a substantial assistance, you know, the government may give you a 35B. I mean, I really think he was honestly trying to do that.
You've got agreement on both of those. You're using
I do.
All your time on the
I'm
stipulated
sorry.
Errors.
Right. So in any case, we do agree, obviously, on both those counts that
so let's talk about 2K2. Another felony offense.
All right. The only issue then really comes down to the definite article, the, or the, if it's followed by a vowel sound, as we know from the definition of the word. The word is added in the latest 2008 commission notes under 2K2.1b6. And it's added so that the Eighth Circuit and the Tenth Circuit, in the cases that are cited, do acknowledge their belief that the word applies back to the instant offense or the offense of conviction for the defendant. However, they don't use that language. They just say the explosive or firearms offenses when they're describing the new definition of another felony offense, which I believe is confusing, and I don't believe it reflects their intent, given the fact that all of the cases involve either a defendant committing another act after possessing that's it's separate and distinct, whether it is a firearms-type offense of firing a weapon or some other complete other offense involving the weapon that's separate from his possession or obtaining the weapon, or selling it or transferring it to another person who, while they might be a felon in possession, they commit a separate offense. I mean, you look at the Juarez case and the language that the court uses there, and I quote, "The addition of the word the in the amendment indicates the Sentencing Commission's intention to no longer exclude all explosive and or firearms possessions or trafficking offenses from the definition of another felony offense." So I think they're saying there, too, that they're not talking. It's not all. They don't believe. The Tenth Circuit in Juarez doesn't believe that to be true. In fact, they said, quote, "Making a false statement to a federally licensed firearms dealer is distinct from the crime where it was used to support the application of the enhancement, which is the illegal carrying of those weapons over the Mexican border." And, you know, it's assumed, I believe, that in, even though it doesn't say in Juarez, that the man that, to whom this woman was engaged in straw purchasing for him was probably a felon. But that's not their concern. Their concern is that it's another complete offense.
International trafficking.
And they're discussed in all these cases. The defendant discusses this, and there's nothing in our record where Mr. Jones and Mr. Walker discussed any use of this weapon or the relationship, like in Mahalik. Mahalik, his cellie, his former cellmate, so he was in federal prison or whatever, in prison, he was a gangster disciple with them. He was a felon. He offered to trade crack cocaine for the weapon. There's all these other things besides the fact that Mr. Foster, in that case, was a felon in possession. So
you're not arguing that the Sentencing Commission couldn't include the 922G offense. You're just saying you don't think it did based on this.
It did. I think it's, and if you look at their notes and why they changed that designation to really include burglary offenses and drug offenses, you know, they were really specific, and they weren't saying, you know, I think we ought to include, you know, status offenders of felons in possession also. So I think it's clear that it needs to go back. This case needs to be vacated, the sentence, and sent back on all of these issues.
What is the import of the change in terminology to refer to the weapons offense, the firearms offense, or explosive offense? I mean, you're saying it doesn't mean what the government says it means, but what does it mean? Affirmatively.
I think it means that. Well, it can mean. I think it's unclear what it means. I think that's the problem. I think it could mean, yes, we're talking about that felon in possession.
I mean, the natural reading of the language
is that it
excludes the offense at issue that is the predicate that's
and
the
yet they don't use
being
that
sentenced
language.
For. So anything else is included.
Well, except if you look at other guidelines, they'll often say, they'll use the terminology, the instant offense, the offense of conviction, the predicate offense, like the court just used. Instead, they just put the word the. And that could refer to another status offender as a recipient, I believe, based on the facts of this case and the facts of other cases, because it's not a completely different crime. It's a status offense. It's, yes, I give it to you, and I give you a weapon knowing you're a felon. Well, have I really facilitated, or do I have really reason to believe that you're going to commit another offense other than your own status offense? And is that the real intent behind this commission note? And if you look at it, and if you apply our hypothetical at the end, where Mr. Jones in this case could have been charged with 922D1 as transferring to a felon. And he could have been charged with the possession of felon. And those would have been grouped, and we would not have a higher number. I'm kind of leaves open the door for the government to selectively charge someone thinking, oh, I can beef it up in the sentencing, his guideline range. Whereas if you look at 2K2.1B5, that already takes care of persons who are prohibited from having firearms. So I think that there's perhaps a misstep here with the guidelines, but I think it's clear that it shouldn't be attributed toward Mr. Jones in this case.
Okay. If you want to save a minute, that would be fine. Mr. Jacobs.
May it please the Court, Counsel. As appellate counsel pointed out, the government has conceded the base offense level was incorrectly calculated, and because we can't be certain that the judge wouldn't have imposed a different sentence, we agree the case needs to be remanded with a new base offense level. We are asking that
you also, I take it, are willing to say that the judge failed to understand his discretion at the 3553 level to adjust the sentence appropriately given the defendant's cooperation.
Well, there's definitely some ambiguity because clearly in determining the guidelines, he needed a government's motion to depart downward.
Right. But we all know there's a subtle difference between getting that guideline level correct.
Right. But also, because we agree it needs to be remanded, we agree it gives the judge the opportunity to clear up. If there is some misunderstanding, give him the opportunity to correct that misunderstanding. If it's just a misphraseology, to correct his phraseology.
Okay, so we can focus on 2K2.1B6.
And
the issue there, I think, is to what extent do we apply to that definite article the context in which it appears, the other definitions in the guidelines, things like application note 14D, which talks about possessing a firearm to facilitate another firearms or explosives offense, the interaction between B6 and B5. I mean, there are a lot of things that, a lot of moving parts here, and many of the moving parts seem to make the government's interpretation strained.
Yeah, I would say, Judge, I would come at it a different way. The question is there a reason to ignore the express language of 2K2.1B6?
I'm not sure that ignores it. I could say the offense of possessing a firearm while being a felon, well, people in normal conversation would say that's an offense. That's the offense described in the Federal Criminal Code of this particular nature. So the fact that you're talking about the offense could simply mean this is an offense under the Federal Criminal Code, or it could mean the offense in question in this case that the defendant himself or herself committed. I don't know that it's quite as clear-cut as you say.
But remember, that's in the commentary. We start with the guideline itself, and the guideline is broad. It just says if you transfer it to facilitate another felony offense, then you get to four levels.
Then there's that word, another felony offense.
Right.
So we have to understand what that means, and we're told by the Supreme Court that we have to pay attention to the commentary.
Right, and obviously this court decision in Mihalik and Dicta suggested that as it was previously phrased, it excluded categorically any firearms possession and trafficking offenses. And they didn't just add the, they went from the plural. You know, in the original version it says it excludes offenses other than explosive or firearm possession or trafficking offenses. And it adds the, but then it goes to the singular in the phraseology of the application note. The question is there any reason to ignore the express language of the guidelines in that commentary? And the government says, no, there's no reason, because as the commentary makes clear
that this, I mean, I'm looking at this definition. Another felony offense for purposes of subsection B6 means any federal, state, or local offense other than the explosive or firearms possession or trafficking offense. Well,
offense.
That doesn't tell me which one. There is an offense out there in the world that prohibits possession or trafficking of explosives or firearms. And if this is so clear, then why would we have added the new provision?
I would say the earlier provision was not clear, and this provision is clear. And you read that and it says...
Well, it's not clear. I mean the new provision about trafficking. the 2K2.1B6 capital A, transporting guns outside of the United States. If this language already covered that, you wouldn't have needed it.
Well, it may be that they recognize that there were courts that were holding specifically that that type of criminal conduct wasn't being covered, and so they specifically addressed that. But at the same time,
but
they
it should have been covered. You would, under your reading, there would have been no need for 2K2.1B6 capital A.
If they simply made the change to the second part of the application note, as originally written, it could be misinterpreted because it used plural and didn't use a definitive pronoun. When they amended it, it probably would have been unnecessary to make that change, but I think they were specifically addressing an instance to make it particularly clear after that. Whereas when you read the language of the amended guideline, it's very broad. It says any. There's any offense. It doesn't say violent. It doesn't say drug-related. It's any. And it's not any federal, state, local. It's really broad. You don't need to be charged. It says regardless of whether you're charged or not. I mean, everything about the commentary says interpret this broadly, with the exception of the explosive or firearms possession or trafficking offense. And that's just the word another. That's just the definition of what another means. It has to be separate and distinct. And clearly that's the case here. The defendant
you are asking us to insert extra words into this definition other than the explosive or firearms possession or trafficking offense of which the defendant is being charged, has been convicted or something like that.
Asking the court to say that when it says the offense, it's referring to the offense of which the defendant is convicted.
Exactly, and that's adding words. And I'm telling you, there are two ways of reading that word, the.
Well, and that's why we asked the court to resolve that issue. Since it's coming back, no reason to generate more litigation down the road and bring it back on appeal, so at least the court has the opportunity to resolve that.
Resolved. I don't disagree with that at all.
It's just the government's view that when you read that, that Juarez correctly interpreted that it focused on the offense of conviction, and there really isn't a logical reason why it is that this particular type of offense would be excluded, since all other local felonies, any other local felony, violent, nonviolent, white collar, anything would be included if it's associated with that gun, but selling a gun to another convicted felon is...
Well, it always has been excluded, so I guess that's something to take into account.
Well, and it's not clear why that is. It's not as if there's legislative history or something to suggest why that it may be that it was poorly phrased at first and now is more precisely phrased because there's not a logical reason. It's not as if someone said the sentencing guidelines commentary indicated they didn't want to include when you give a gun to a felon, something we all agree is a felony offense, a significant offense, but when a felon facilitates that crime, we're not going to count it. Any other crime he facilitates, we're going to give him a four-level bump. So I would say they've tightened up the language to avoid any ambiguity and that there's no reason to ignore the express language of 2K2.1.
It's a pretty pathetic way to avoid ambiguity.
Actually, the guideline itself is completely unambiguous. What introduced ambiguity is the commentary. And that has been perpetuated, it seems to me, by the amendments. What's the import of subsection D of Application Note 14, which encourages the use of departure procedure if the firearm is used or possessed to facilitate another firearms or explosives offense?
I took that to mean that the potential, because the possession of a firearm can be so wide and varying that sometimes it goes well beyond somebody giving another felon a gun. It goes to a much more violent and more dangerous situation. So they say in those situations, explosive offenses, we may even, there may be support for even further upward departures because you're not just facilitating a possession offense, a status offense. You have the potential there, to an explosive offense, something much more dangerous, much more significant.
Although you could simply read it to say, since we've excluded it from B6, we're highlighting for the judge that there's still the possibility to depart upward if it's a firearm or explosive to facilitate another firearms or explosives offense. You're not powerless. You can go ahead and move the actual guideline range up as opposed to just 3553.
I suppose that's one possible.
I mean, it's
it's one possible interpretation. It may be that the commentary is not as clear as it should be. But again, given that the guideline itself is clear, I don't think we necessarily have to resort to an ambiguous commentary to work around.
Do you think commentary can ever cut back on the scope of a guideline?
Well, I would say this commentary intends to give a broad reading to that sentencing guideline so that...
But that's not what I asked. Do you think that
is it
commentary
possible?
Never can put boundaries on the reading of a guideline?
No, I think it can. I think if it conflicts with, you should go with the guideline first.
Well, of course, yeah, if there's conflict. But rarely there's conflict. It's more, do you read it very broadly? Do you read it narrowly? Somewhere in between?
Well, in fact, the old commentary to this guideline cut back on the application of the enhancement. It categorically excluded other firearms offenses.
To do that, to cut back on what is otherwise very broad language.
So in that sense, it's inconsistent with the face of the guideline itself,
the
Sentencing Commission has created a real mess here.
The previous commentary was, I'd say, inconsistent with the broad language of the guideline itself. If there are any further questions, Your Honors, thank you.
Thank you. Anything further?
I think you've summed it up, the Court has summed it up very well by saying it's a mess. And why it is also a mess, perhaps, is because historically felons in possession of firearms have been excluded from this guideline. And maybe it is, just throwing it out there, because so many of these people, I mean,
It's not just the felon in possession offense that has been excluded. It's all firearms offenses had been excluded, which significantly cut back on the application of this enhancement.
But if you look at...
And it's atextual. The commentary was atextual to the guidelines. And so the argument can be made, and I think the government is making the argument, that the amended guideline simply brings the commentary into a textual interpretation of the guideline itself rather than the old atextual commentary.
That may be true, or it may not be, because, you know, I don't know of a case where the firearm hasn't been transferred or straw purchase hasn't been made because the recipient is a felon. So perhaps that
seems
is taking...
to me a rather common scenario.
It is. So why double it up? Why allow for double counting? If you look at 2K2.1B6 and its intent...
It's not double counting unless the Sentencing Commission says it is in the guidelines themselves.
But I think...
That's not a decision for us to make. We just have to interpret what they've given us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
We thank you very much for your assistance to the court and for your assistance to your client. Thanks also to the government. We will take the case under advisement.